This episode is sponsored by Fire and Fuel Coaching, where I help you discover who you are and where you want to go, both on and off the job. For more information, please reach out to me at my Instagram handle at @juryfireandfuel.
This podcast is part of the Everyday Heroes Podcast Network, the network for first responders and those who support them.
Welcome. The trials of first responders and their families aren't easy. Enduring the Badge podcast is building a community to help them out. Introducing your host, backed by 30 years of experience as a first responder, Jerry Dean Lund.
Hi everyone, before we jump into this next episode, I want to thank my sponsor, Patriot Supreme, a veteran-owned company with products made in the U.S. Patriot Supreme makes the best CBD products I've ever used. I really love their CBD roll-on. It's got a deep freeze feel to it. I use it in different joint areas when they feel a little tight or there's a little bit of a pinch. I also use it on my muscles when they're a little bit sore. You can use that up to 4 times a day for pain relief. Check them out at patriotsupreme.com and be sure to follow them on Instagram and Facebook as well. Let's jump right into this next episode with my very special guest, Autumn Clifford. How you doing, Autumn?
Good, Jerry. Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Yeah, thanks for being on. Got a lot of things going on in life and I'm glad I can still an hour of your time.
Well, thank you.
Tell the audience a little bit about yourself.
Yeah. So, hey, everybody. My name is Autumn Clifford. I am a podcaster as well. And awesome. So this is really exciting to be on here. So brace yourself because we might go for a little while. That's typically what happens whenever I get to chat with a fellow podcaster. It's like we just go off together, which is really fun. I'm a police officer from Maine. I'm a life coach. I'm an adjunct professor and I'm a police wife. I'll tell you just a little bit about me as if that's okay, Jerry.
That's great.
Just to get going. So I've been a police officer since I've been 20 years old, but I think I was like 26 and a half. So six and a half years into my career, I sustained a career ending injury for full time. I tell people it's nothing cool. I don't have a really good story. I wish I was like in a pursuit or doing something. Yeah. I don't. I actually just have kind of what's typical for a lot of first responders is I have a really bad back injury. And so that took me out of full-time patrol. And when that happened, I went through a massive identity crisis. Maybe anybody listening can understand that is, you know, when you want to be a first responder, and I'm sure my firefighters can relate to this, right?
Yeah.
It's all you think about, right? That's all like you're preparing for it. That's all you think about. You just can't wait. You know, you go to school for it. You do all these things. And so then you're in the job and you're doing it. And that's your whole life, right? Like I married my police academy sweetheart. Our whole lives are just the job. And then all of a sudden, like just literally within a course of a week, like my life went to hell. And my doctor was like, no, you can do dispatch, but full-time patrol isn't going to work for you anymore. And I'm like, does this bitch look like a dispatcher? Yeah. I am not a dispatcher. And no offense to my dispatchers, but once you're out on the road, like you don't want to come and sit behind.
No.
You get that.
So
I just faced such adversity. It was very depressing. I was very depressed. I got diagnosed with PTSD and an anxiety disorder. I was literally couch ridden for 6 months. I felt like I was going to go be the Walmart greeter because my education, like I'm educated, but my master's is in criminal justice. And so I was like, what the hell am I going to go do?
Right.
That's
right.
All I ever want. You know, I thought I was going to go and be in the administration. And from there, that was my low. I would say that was my rock bottom, really bad. I'm making it sound short and sweet and really good, but truly it was devastating. And from there, I said, okay, I'm not gonna, after months of, you know, going, we all go through that whole, like, woe is me. So I had my woe is me. My husband sat me down and was like, I don't know where, at the time I was his girlfriend. And he's like, I don't know where my girlfriend went, but we need to find her because you are not being you. And this is fucking scary. And so I decided to be a life coach. I've been life coaching for the last 7 years. I started my podcast like 3 or 4 years ago, and I've been able to help people based on what I've learned in my life. You know, I'm not certified. I'm not anybody special, Jerry. I took my training, education, and experience, and I said, hey, I'm one step ahead of somebody. Let me help them. And that's what I've been doing.
I love that. I love that you've taken your own thing and created it. You know, being a first responder and being able to relate to other first responders is amazing. If you know my story a little bit, I had a really bad injury and almost lost my job and went through 500 days out of work. So mm-hmm. I think that is something that many of us can relate to, is like, anytime you get hurt on the job, you're like, okay, is this it? Is this the end? I'm not going to be able to go back and do and be and everything I was. We fall into the trap of like our identity, like our job is our identity. Mm-hmm. Like that 6 months, I would be curious, what was going on for those 6 months? Let's not be short and sweet about it. Let's dive down into this a little bit, because I know there's something in there that's going to help somebody else.
Yeah, it was bad. it was bad. You know, to be honest with you, I didn't do a whole lot. I remember being on my couch and like, I'm not a big TV person. I grew up being able to watch unlimited amounts of TV. Okay. So then like when I started, you know, when I became an adult and into my professional life, I just was like, I just wasn't my thing. Right. So when, you know, and that was since I've been like, honestly, I don't know, 16 years old, I kind of stopped watching a ton of TV, but I'll tell you, 10 years later, here I am. I have nothing but time, and I'm binging Netflix, and I'm like depressed as fuck. And I'm sitting on my couch like all of the day laying, because sitting was killing me, because I was going to the chiropractic neurologist and the PT and my doctor's appointments. And I'm sure you can relate to this, but I was going anywhere from 3 to 5 days a week.
Yeah.
So, and that can be depressing, because like, right. You go there and you're like, am I fixed? Like, I'm good. Like, yeah. Let's do this, you know? And, you know, like with anything, oh, well, we think this is going to be good, but we can't guarantee it. And
right.
Yeah, I couldn't work out. The only workout I could do was at PT, which was not really a workout, or I could walk. I spent a lot of time walking, because I was going crazy. I'm not a person to just do nothing. And so I was going a little crazy. I was grumpy as all get up. Here's what happened, is my agency turned their backs on me. The whole agency. There was actually an email. I found out this later. There was actually an email that got put out telling everybody not to talk to me. That came from the chief. Okay. I worked in a 50-person department, not very big. And like, I was best friends with like one of my partners. He uninvited me from his wedding.
Ouch.
I spent like 4 years. Me and my husband spent years with him and his wife. Like, we did everything together and we were best of friends. I remember when we bought the house that we were in, because it was a fixer upper, he was painting my fucking walls. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Who does that? Nobody does that unless you're like, right, your good friend.
Right, right. Right. Yeah. Nobody wants to paint.
No. And, you know, and for some reason, you know, he just uninvited me from his wedding and then stopped talking to me. And it was everybody stopped talking to me. And I think people don't understand the power that had in my mind. That made me feel like, oh my God, I could have prevented this. I'm making it up. I'm a piece of shit. Like, mm-hmm. I really am nobody. I'm, you know, and so I sat with those thoughts. I'm sure you can relate. If you were out of the job for 500 days, like,
yeah,
you had days where you're just like, I don't know. I'm nothing.
Yeah.
What am I doing?
Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I know somebody that's listening, that's been hurt and listening to that. I think that now that you said that, it's like those feelings are, those are spot on. I guess maybe a few people go through an injury like that and can bounce back, but don't have those thoughts. But I sure did, being out that long, especially when people stop talking to you. And then when you think that people are thinking, oh, they're just making this up, like they don't want to work. I'm like, well, last thing I want to do is be home, you know, not being able to work.
Let me tell you a story. I don't even know if I've ever told this story before. So let me tell you it is. So you know, when you're doing PT and what PT is, right? Physical therapy. And so what you're doing is you're building muscles to become stronger, or fixing postures or whatever, so that you can no longer be hurt. Right. But part of that is like doing a little lifting, you know, doing some workouts, right? Not like fucking CrossFit, high intensity workouts here. Right. So my PT, I was going to him 5 days a week, and then he put me down to 3 days a week. And he said to me, you need to go to the gym for 2 days. Here's what you need to do. You need to work out. I said, okay. So this is while I'm out of work. Okay. And workers' comp is going crazy, and everybody, mm-hmm. I'm the worst person in the world.
Right. Right.
I go to my gym, and I see my old FTO. Get this. My old FTO, who happens to, he worked, in like an undercover task force. And my husband, my boyfriend at the time, but now husband, he, is a pretty well-known, canine handler. And our dog, he's retired now, but he was a drug dog. So this guy would call my husband all the fucking time. Okay. Like all the time, and be like, hey, can you come help us? Can you help us? Da, 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 da. Right. So they had a good working rapport. He was my prior FTO, underlining. So then he sees me at the gym. Oh, Clifford, hey, what's up? What's up? We're talking, and I'm doing a little lifting. I'm doing everything that I'm supposed to be doing. The next fucking day, he lands in the chief's office, and you know what he does? Fucking Clifford, she's making this whole thing up. She's faking. I just saw her at the gym. She's faking. I get a fucking call that day from my attorney, and he's like, hey, what are you doing? I'm like, exactly what my fucking physical therapist told me to do. What, you know?
Yeah.
And that crushed me. And I guess basically, Jerry, what's important for people to know is that it crushed me because I didn't have anything outside of the job. I didn't know who I was if I wasn't in uniform.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And we take on these first responder careers. We completely self-identify as, this is who I am. And so then what happens is what everybody else's opinions of us are matter to us. Here's what happened. So that was really bad shit road downhill. And it took me years. Now, let me tell you where I'm at now. I'd say it's been 5 or 6 years. I'm 31 and that. And so, yeah, about 5 years. So now I don't self-identify as anything but me. And I honestly do not care. I'm good with who I am. And to some people, you're going to get offended by that, but that's just your own shit. If you're getting offended because I'm cool with me, go get cool with you. Because, but that is what saved my life, is when I started being like, okay, wait a minute, I can't live like this. And let me just say this, and I'm sorry, I'm on a soapbox. So, and I want to hear everything you have to say, obviously, but
good. You're doing great.
I want to say this is, I remember sitting, like, I'm going to just say this too. Like, my career wasn't easy. Okay. My career was not easy. And a lot of people are like, oh, here she goes. She's going to, you know, play the female card, but it's true. I was sexually harassed. I went through a lot of shit, a lot of trauma right in the beginning of my career. I didn't know. I just didn't know things. But when the people you're working with are like fooling around in front of the sergeant, but they're like telling you how slutty you are and that you're a fucking whore and that, you know, you're like the neighborhood tricycle. And like, that's what they're saying to me, like trying to bust my balls.
All right, everybody, let's take a little break in the action. I want to thank one of my sponsors, Responder Wipes. They make an incredible wipe that can quickly and easily remove contaminants from your skin. They come in 3 amazing sizes, and they can be used by firefighters, law enforcement, military, anyone that just wants a quick cleanup. The wipes are aloe and alcohol-free because both of those ingredients are penetrant enhancers. These are the thickest wipes on the market. They don't shred or tear on your 5 o'clock shadow, maybe like those crappy baby wipes that you've been using. Time to throw those out and get some responder wipes. They leave you feeling clean and invigorated. You can also use them as a cooling towel around your neck on those really scorching days. But most importantly about this product is you need to use them after all types of exposures to help reduce the risk of occupational cancer. Be sure to check out their website at responderwipes.com and follow them on Instagram. Let's get right back into the action.
Mind you, I was in a relationship with my husband the whole time, so I wasn't a badge bunny. So I'm like, I don't understand. But they were saying things like that to me. The sergeant's letting it slide. He's kind of in on it. And I tell them to knock it the fuck off, go in my cruiser and cry for a minute, because I'm like, wait, I'm supposed to want to take a bullet for these motherfuckers? No, I don't.
Right.
And, you know, so I can relate to that shit too, because you get into this career and you're like, okay, like, it's a brother and a sisterhood, but it's not. It can be, but a lot of times it's not. And anyways, and so I, you know, my career wasn't easy. And I remember sitting in my cruiser, working the overnights, the late outs, and which was a really hard shift for me. I would always fall asleep by like 3 a.m. I was like passed out somewhere. But I remember sitting there going, there's got to be more. There has to be more than this. I see my sergeant, who's all my sergeants, overweight, you know, faces are red because they drink too much. You know, their relationships are on the fringes or whatever. You know, how much are they really in their children's life? They're miserable. Like, and I just see it through the ranks and I'm like, what the fuck? I don't want to be like this. Right. And so I saw a lot of turmoil and I knew I didn't want to be like that, Jerry. I didn't want to be like everybody else. I'm like, and I would sit there and I'd pray to God and I'm like, God, there's gotta be more. There's gotta be more. I can't do this. Pulling up car to car and listening to what everybody had to say was never positive. I was always like, oh, let's redirect because I'm going to get negative, but you can only redirect so much. And then they like got you hook, line and sinker because you agree with them, but you just might not always want to talk about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. 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 How do you get out of that trap? Would you find yourself in it? What's your advice to get out of that trap? Because it happens to every single one of us, anybody that works any job. If you try to avoid redirect and continue on in a positive manner, but you get sucked in at times.
Truly you do. You know, it's two things. Because of course, you know, now I coach a lot of people, first responders, but people in all walks of life and they all have different jobs. And a lot of them ask me this. I think I have two pieces of advice. The first is physically remove yourself. I can't tell you how many times I'm like, oh shit, my husband's calling, I gotta go. And like, I'd like drive off. He was never calling, but I'm like, I just can't be around this. You know, I physically would remove myself, but the other thing that I would do is I make it like so obvious that I just can't hear what they're saying. Like when somebody's like, can you believe this guy? I'm like, yeah, I can. What? Because you have to understand negativity. They're just, misery loves company. Right. So that's all people want.
Yeah.
It's not really about anything other than they feel like shit. And so they want you to feel like shit with them. And guess what? When you don't feel like shit with them all the time, they're going to stop coming to you. You know,
yeah.
But the more you agree with people, the more they're like, oh yeah, yeah. You know, Clifford, she gets it. So I'm going to go talk to her. Because she makes me feel better. She makes you feel better, right? I was making people feel better because I wasn't doing that. I wasn't diverting as much. I wasn't being like, you're full of shit, or you could look at it this way, but I'm choosing to look at it this way. I didn't do that. I would just go, oh yeah. Cause it was easier for me to just, you know, go along with them. But in the long run, it made me depressed. In the long run, I want everybody to hear this. My whole fucking agency turned their back on me and I'm the one who's still injured to this day. My husband and I, we run 3 to 5 miles, three times a week. Okay. Like this morning, we just got back on a run, back home from a run. And I go, holy hell, my back is killing me. I'm still dealing with this injury, but yet these motherfuckers think they're going to just turn their back on me. Right. Like I did something wrong.
Yeah.
So just try to remember that too, is like, like, how much are you sacrificing for people who literally don't, they don't really care about you? That's a hard thing. No one's talking about it. They all want to talk about the brotherhood, but it's the truth.
There is a lot of truth to what you're saying. There's a lot of truth. And I don't know if it's like our perceptions may be a little bit different because it actually has happened to us. And so other people like, no, it's not going to be that way. If it happens to me, you're not any different, honestly. I mean, it's chances are it's going to happen to you if you go out on a work-related injury.
I think you and I can agree. We pray that it's different because there are those instances. You know, there's different agencies that handle things differently, straight up. By and large, it's the same. But there are those anomalies, right? Like you hear those stories where, you know, guys or girls have gone out and it's been great. And the department's sending them fucking flowers and whatever. And, oh, whatever you need, take your time. But the majority of us aren't going to face that.
right. I totally agree with you. So you do with your coaching and stuff like that. I'm assuming you're coaching some younger female officers getting into, you know, into these positions as police officers. And then like, what kind of tips do you have for them? How do you build up some mental resiliency and maybe thicken up your skin? I don't know if that's probably not the right word, you know, because they're going to face a lot of things that maybe I wouldn't face as a male.
Yeah. So it's really, I'm glad that you brought that up. So what I have is I call it a club. It's called the Lady Sheepdog Club. And the sheepdog, if anybody's not familiar with it, it's a term that Lieutenant Colonel David Grossman, the author of On Combat, and he has got a book called On Killing. Anyways, he's a huge law enforcement and military advocate. Anyways, he came up with the term sheepdog. Okay. And the reason I'm explaining this, because there could be somebody on here who's like sheepdog, like a fucking Sheltie, Lassie, like what are you talking about? What it is the whole idea, right, is that there's the sheepdog, which is the protector of the pack. You have the sheep, who is just, you know, civilians in society. And then you have the wolves, who are always feeding on the sheep. And so the sheepdogs are the first responders, are the people, the warriors who are out there looking, you know, for the wolves to protect the sheep. Okay. So that's what it is. So I created what I call it's called the Lady Sheepdog Group Club. And basically it's exactly that. So I help new female officers. I have a lot of officers who've been in the game too for a while. And then I love taking brand new or future ones and kind of taking them under my wing. And what I tell them, Jerry, is I'm like their real life FTO because I'm going to tell you things that are not politically correct. And I'm going to tell you how to survive, because even if you're getting on the job and there's other female officers, they don't like you. Most of them, they don't. If you're a female, they don't. The thing is when we all get on the job, doesn't matter what job, right? Firefighting, EMT, dispatch, correction, it doesn't matter. We're looking at those motherfuckers like, they better be able to do this job. Right, they better be able to do this, right? Because a lot of it, they're our backup. You know, when shit goes downhill, you're my lifeline. So you bet your ass I'm going to be hard on you. I'm not just going to be so happy that, you know, Joe Shit the Ragman decided they're going to come and be a first responder. Right. Yeah. So what I teach, you know, I teach my lady sheepdogs, you know, you asked about the resiliency and stuff. I just lay on that. There's no sugarcoating, like right from day one. This might not be the job for you. You know, I just tell them like, this is what you're going to be dealing with. If you have never been punched in the face, you bet your ass you need to go kickbox, go and get punched in the face. If you don't know how to throw a punch, if you, you know, you can never really prepare people for the things that they're going to go through, but I provide a realistic platform for them to come in, talk to me, hear it real life. I've got a ton of training. Right. So it's not such a smack in the face. It's like, oh, Autumn's told me that before. Oh, okay. That's what she was talking about. And for me, it just seems to lighten the blow a little bit.
Right. Because I can see that.
Yeah. Because I can't really. I mean, I don't even know them like in person. Right. But like, so I can't really mold them the way that I would if we were in person. You know what I mean? Doing these things. But I do the best that I can. Because I feel like the type of woman that's coming to me is like, no, I want to be squared away. I want to be looked at as damn good backup. I want to be looked at like I'm an equal. I am not looking to be better than anybody or less than anybody. I just want to be like one of the guys. So what do I need to do? And I'm like, all right, here we go.
Yeah, no, that is awesome. Cause when you have a little preparation and you don't get taken off guard, you know, by everything that happens, you're able to, I think, function at a higher level. So I think that's great.
With
your experience, and people probably don't know that you're a second degree black belt too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, they didn't know. I'll tell you a really funny story. It's in the academy. Nobody knew. I kept my mouth shut. And
that's wise.
Yeah. I kept my mouth shut. And then I'll never forget. I'll tell you two stories. This female, she's a state trooper now. And we were friends, but she pissed me off. She called me out. So what we were doing is we were doing the circle drill, and I went to a live-in academy. It was paramilitary style. And I was one of 60 cadets. Okay. I was one of 8 women out of those 60. And she calls me out. Mind you, she doesn't know who the fuck I am. Right. So she calls me out in front of everybody. And she's like, Clifford, you and me, let's go, in front of everybody. I looked to her and I said, you really don't want to do this. And she's like, yeah, I do. Like, okay. And anyways, that was probably the shortest match she's ever been in. The shortest fight. It was a really short fight for me. And it was just like, I'm like, come on, like, what are you doing? Stop trying to call me out, right? But there was another situation which was awesome, was we were doing boxing. You know, again, it was a whole circle, the whole academy members, they're all in a circle. And then it'd be, you know, the instructor would tap your shoulder and then go tap another shoulder, and you got to go out and you got to box. And, you know, everyone's shitting their pants, not me, because I'm like, all right, here we go. Cause like, and here's what I just want to say is like, by the time I was 13 years old in my karate dojo, which when I say karate, we trained judo and jujitsu and boxing and kickboxing, mixed martial arts. We did it all. And by the time I was 13 years old, I was in the black belt class, and I had these 6'2" motherfuckers, you know, 200 pounds beating the shit out of me. Like by, you know, I would see the light. And if anybody knows what that means, I mean, yeah. I was seeing the light all the time. Like I was getting the stars knocked right out of me constantly, but it made me tougher, and it made me not afraid to fight, you know?
Yeah.
So he, my instructor, he taps my shoulder, taps this other guy's shoulder. And this guy just starts throwing haymaker after haymaker. Cause of course he doesn't know how to box. And I'm like, I'm going to kill you. I stomp kicked him in the chest and threw him across the gymnasium. You should have heard the uproar. And my instructor's like, Clifford, you can only use your feet. You can't use your hands. So next thing you know, he's boxing me. I'm using my feet. It was just so fun. But I highly recommend that to anybody and everybody. And in fact, on my podcast, Changing the Culture, I talk about this, Jerry, is that if you're a first responder, you need to be in some sort of martial art. You need to have that experience.
Yeah,
because then you're not afraid to get punched. And people think, oh, she thinks she's so tough. No. I don't. Okay. I just know that I'm not afraid to get punched in the head. And since I'm not afraid to get punched in the head, I don't have as many problems on the street. But if you're afraid, you're going to have problems, because people can smell that. A street guy or a girl, okay, who, you know, been like living on the street, you know, that they know, they can smell fear a mile away, right? They can smell it. And if if you're a cop and you're going to kind of giving that off, you're going to get eaten up. And so that's like my biggest piece of advice.
Yeah. Cause I don't think the academy really, I mean, it teaches at the very, 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 very basic levels, to handle yourself and handle someone. That's just, I don't feel like right is enough to cut it out on the street. And you see it all the time. I'm not saying I am any different, but you see it all the time where people are out there having a hell of a time with someone they're trying to arrest. And just like, oh man, a little more hands-on training could really change the way the outcome of this incident is turning.
And truly, it could change everything from the officer's attitude, because in this, like, and there's a group like online or whatever on Instagram, like you can just see like the ones of us who've gone hands-on and know what we're doing, when we go hands-on, we're not stressed out. I'm not stressed out. It's fine. Like everything's going to be fine. Yeah. Of course, like deep down I'm stressed. Right. But like but when you're a fighter, you know, a couple of things. One, you need to be breathing and you need to be working through all of this because, you know, a 2-minute fight feels like a 2-hour fight. It's just right. how it, you right. know, it's how it is. And so I just feel like if we had officers that were well-trained, you know, purple belt in jujitsu or even in boxing and kickboxing, and people are all big on jujitsu. I am too. I'm not taking away from that, but I'm going to tell you right now, if you don't know how to throw a punch and how to take a punch, you have no business being a cop. That I'll be honest. I stand by that. And it's not because I want you to go out there and punch everybody. It's you just don't know what's going to happen. You just right. don't. I know of a young woman, her first week on the job, she's with her FTO. She gets knocked out cold, knocked out. She doesn't work in law enforcement anymore.
Yeah. That could, right. That's career ending for many.
Well, that's people. Scary.
Yeah.
That's fucking scary.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But somebody who knows a little bit, you know, might've fucking gone under that punch and came back swinging and that motherfucker wouldn't know what hit him. Right.
Right
or
right.
that punch, but maybe knew enough to move your cheek just a little bit. So it doesn't hit the button right here. So you don't get knocked out and then the fight's on. Right. But she didn't know. And I'm not making her wrong. I respect her, but I'm just saying that is scary. And I don't want that to happen to people, anybody, male or female. And so it can happen to males too. Just yeah, gonna say yeah. that.
I'm gonna throw this out there. I probably shouldn't, but I will. What do you think potentially that could be a reason where some officers may be quick to, I'm not gonna say, judge them, quick to fire or whatever, quick to draw their weapon? Or you think that just being a little bit uncomfortable would make you right take out your weapon a little bit sooner or do something maybe a little you wouldn't normally do if you felt more comfortable about being hands-on with someone? 100%. Every situation is different, but you know.
Yeah, I think there's a totality of the circumstances answer.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because there's been times where I've had to draw my weapon. I've drawn my weapon, not like I've had it out of the holster in the back of my leg and I remember doing a vehicle stop and there was nothing going on other than the hair on my back was standing right up. And it's like, did I have any reason? You know what I mean? All these things. Yeah. And I could tell you all my hunches and the indicators and all these things. And I was like, oh shit. Like they're squirming. They're moving around a ton in there. Could be drugs, but it could be a gun. Like, I don't know what's going on. So even with what, like my 20 plus years of, you know, martial arts experience, there are circumstances where officers are going to be scared. However, you give me an officer who's been training for 5 years or even 3 years or hell, just 1 year, that officer is going to be far more comfortable to go hands-on. And probably depending on the totality of this, you know, circumstances is going to be more apt to go hands-on versus grabbing a tool, taser, yeah. gun, mace. They're probably going to be like, oh, fuck all that shit.
Right.
You know,
I know what works in my hands.
Exactly.
These other things might not mm-hmm. work. So in your, through your coaching and stuff like that, I know you had one statement in there that really kind of stuck out to me. And you said you find yourself falling forward. Like you're always having a movement, failing yes. forward. Thank you. Yeah. Failing forward. So explain that a little bit. What's that? How'd you get to that mindset?
Yeah. Well, so you know those people who just kind of seem like they always like have it all together. Do you ever go to high school like with these people who like A pluses and they are like amazing athletes and they get all the guys or they get all the girls or whatever, right? And they just got it going on. Like shit just seems easy for them, right? Yeah. That wasn't me. Like I wouldn't say like things will flow for me. Right. But like, I failed a lot. Okay. Like I don't even know. It was like right out of the womb. Like I just fucked up a lot of shit. Like I was like the second person in my entire dojo. My dojo's been been on since the 1960s. I was the second person in my dojo to fail fucking a belt test. I failed my green belt test. I was like 12. Like, what? How does that happen? I was crushed. The whole dojo was like, oh my God, you're a piece of shit. Like, you're the, you know what I mean? Like, what? And, you know, I'll tell you, Jerry, I think that that was one of the times in my life that was, that defined who I was. And my mother looked at me and she said, well, you can quit, which I come from a very Italian family. I was actually never going to quit. She'll tell you this day. Oh no, you were never going to quit. Yeah. But I had to make you think this was your decision. And she looked at me and she said, well, you have two options. You can quit, or you can go back and you can train harder and you can get your belt. Like, what are you going to do? And I just was told her, I was like, no, I'm going to get it. I'm going to get it. And that to me was failing forward from that point. Okay. Let me just tell you about this. From that point, not only did I get my green belt, I went on to become one of the best competitors in the entire state of Maine. In kata, it's like a form in fighting. I won several national titles and won, you know, several. I had like 3 years in a row. I was the Maine state grand champion. And then
that's incredible.
Thank you. And I was second in New England. And then I met Chuck Norris and I won big titles at these huge tournaments. And it was all because of that moment where I had to develop true grit, right? Resilience, like at its finest. And from there, I could tell you more and more stories. You know, I have failed more times than I haven't. Let me tell you, I'll just relay it back to the job really quick. My first FTO. So in Maine, you have two FTO phases. I don't know if we have two FTO phases. So you have your first 8 weeks with one officer, then you have your second 8 weeks with another officer. And that's after the 18-week academy. And my first officer, he was great. Him and I jived. We trained jujitsu. We worked out, like we would work all day. And then I would go meet him and his girlfriend and we would go all work out at this gym together. And like, it was just, he just was one of the rare ones, you know, one who just, he just cared. He was like, all right, we're getting you in shape. Like we're doing everything. And it was just awesome. And then I get with the second FTO who, I don't know, to this day, he really doesn't like me because I don't think he likes strong women. And 4 weeks into it, he goes in and has a sit down with my lieutenant and is like, fuck it, I'm done. I can't do this with her anymore. And I'm like, so what happens is my lieutenant pulls me in and he says, all right, you're going to shit or get off the pot. You're all by yourself starting tomorrow. You know, this guy's all done with you. And I'm like, I'm not even like, what? Like I have another 4 weeks. He's like, no, this is it. And to me, that was such a fit. Like that was a moment, right? Because a lot of people would have failed, but you know what I did is I was smart. And this is some really good advice for anybody who's brand new and listening is I didn't like to burn bridges in my past. Okay. So I knew a lot of people prior to me getting on the road. I worked in court security. And so I knew a lot of veteran officers, like real cops. That's what we call real cops. Those guys who didn't give a flying fuck 20, 30 years ago. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I had this whole toolbox of people who I could call. And I made friends, you know, with one to two people on my department and in different departments. So when everybody thought I was going to sink, I just started thinking outside the box. I'm like, okay, if I can't call you, you or you, I'm going to call this guy. Like, I'm not failing. And I flourished. I was great. I was on my own 6 to 9 months before I even went through the academy. Like I was just doing the damn thing. And he wanted me to fail. He was like, he wanted me to fail. Right. And so failing forward to me is we're all going to fail.
Yeah.
We all fail. So instead of just failing, fail forward, fail in a way that's going to make you better than you were before you fell. That's the way that I see it. Right,
right, right. Exactly. In that moment when he's like, well, we're going to be on your own for 4 weeks. Did you have a thought of like, at all? Did you like, I want to be done. Like, I'm like, do I have it to like,
you know, I was scared.
Yeah. We're scared. Yeah.
I'm scared shitless. I mean, you have to understand, like, the agency that I went to, and I this anybody in the big cities, it doesn't really compare, but my agency at that time that I was working was in the city, the capital of Maine, in Augusta. And Augusta happens to be the, like, mental health crisis capital also of Maine. What happened was they had a big mental health hospital, a big one, okay? And then all of a sudden they reformed to only having 200 beds at this hospital. And then everybody went and lived on the street or in halfway houses. And so any police officer, firefighter knows this too, that becomes our problem.
Right.
And right. So we have a huge mental health population, and we don't have enough officers, period. So even when I was in the academy, I handled more calls than officers at bigger agencies, more busier agencies than anywhere. We were the busiest. So I knew what I mean, I'm going to tell you, my shift was 6 P to 6 A. Okay. I was busy. There was no shut eye. There was no, none of that. You would think I was busy from the time I signed on to the time I signed off. We were fucking balls to the walls every day, all day, didn't matter. And it's because of all the reasons I said to you. So was I intimidated? Yeah. But at the same exact time, yeah. I probably felt like, all right, like, this isn't for me. Like, I can't do this. Right. But at the same time, I was like, what the fuck else am I going to do? Like, I can't do anything. You know, that's like where I went. I was like, I've got to be able to do this. And then I did it, you know, and then I did it. And, you know, it was bumpy and I made mistakes and, you know, had sergeants ream me new ones, but it all made me better because I had the mindset of I wasn't a know-it-all. And this is the biggest thing I could tell anybody at any stage of your life. Never become a know-it-all. And even as a coach, you know, I been coaching for 7 years. I'm very proud of that. I'm proud of my wisdom. If you go to any of my social medias, you know, it's very much for my people. It's really not about me. Of course, there's photos of me on my Instagram. Of course, it's my Instagram. But if you go and actually read the captions, it's actually very much for my people, right? And I'm very proud of that. But here's what I'm most proud of. I still have a coach. I'm still being taught. I just humbled myself within the last 9 months and took my crazy Malinois, Belgian Malinois, and we started training to compete competitively. I'm going to tell you right now, Jerry, holy motherfucker. Like, that took me back. Like, I was like, I know nothing. I still know. I still only know, like, nothing, like, barely anything, you know what I mean? But the thing is I never stop being taught. I never stop with that. And I think it's just so important as anybody, because I never became the know-it-all. I just always would listen and I would soak up what everybody has to say. And of course we have to filter what works for us and what doesn't.
Right.
But the fact that I still to this day am not a know-it-all makes people want to help me. And that's key.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're very genuine and authentic. And I think that makes it easy for people to want to help you. Right. It's just like, you don't have a barrier up to being like, yeah, I'm open. I'm willing to learn. Yeah. Like, I'll take it. I'll leave it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll just roll with the punches.
Well, thanks. I try to be like that.
Yeah. But, you know, we all have our certain senses and different times where we have things that happen. What other advice? Well, maybe from, like, we as a police officer's wife, what advice do you have there?
Oh, I have tons.
All right, let's get to the top three then.
Oh man, let's see. You know, I guess here's the thing. It comes down to a lot of different things. It comes down to your relationship. If you are with somebody who shows a lot of signs of not being loyal to you, this job isn't going to help. Okay. Like, straight up. And that's really hard for people to hear, but I mean, women know we're not fucking stupid, and men know you're not stupid. We know if we're with somebody who we got to worry about or not. Okay. Whether you want to know it, it's in the front of your mind, or whether you know it, it's in the back of your mind. I think no matter what, we all kind of have that question. But the reason I'm bringing this up is because people always say to me, well, the divorce rate is extremely high. Well, I don't know. I used to think so too. But then my friend, her name is Cindy Doyle, and she has the Code 4 Couples podcast. She wrote a book, and she actually, with facts, demystified that, because I was like, Cindy, like, you know, and she's like, no, Autumn, that's actually bullshit. The divorce rate for, you know, first responders isn't as high as everybody says it is. It just feels that way. And she was telling me why. What you have to understand is that we, as first responders, we face what's called hypervigilance, the emotional roller coaster. Firefighters face it too, right? With police officers, we don't get the time, the downtime that you guys get, right? Because our shifts, our schedules are just more crazy. And we don't get the downtime of being able to be together in a truck and like shoot the shit or go back to the, a lot of agencies, a lot of stations don't want anybody going back to the station. They want the cops out there. Right. So we don't have that luxury of debriefing and processing any trauma. So what's going on is we're facing all of these very high stress situations. And then you become used to that adrenaline rush, right? Yeah. And then what you're trying to do when you're off time, because it feels so good. And then when the adrenaline, when you come home, you have that adrenaline dump and it doesn't feel good. So what you're doing in your off time is you're trying to make that adrenaline go up. And that's why you see officers have drinking problems. That's why you see them speed. And, you know, why you see them like, and what I mean speed is like, they'll go get motorcycles. Stupid. Yeah. No offense. But I hate that. They'll go get motorcycles. They'll go like really fast, or they'll get boats and like, they'll go make big purchases and they'll go cheat and they will do things to, you know, satisfy the adrenaline hunger, right? Instead of actually just processing what's going on. And so you'll see, you know, you'll see the flirting of the, is the grass greener over there? And that's just another way for these people, men and women, to cope with the fact that they don't know how to deal with the adrenaline going everywhere. Okay. So as a spouse, it's important to understand that a hypervigilance pattern, people don't know it. There's a book. If you're a spouse and you have not read The Emotional Survival of Law Enforcement, go get it. It's like $11 on Amazon. And you need to read it. And so that you can understand what your spouse, your first responder or military officer is going through. And I think the biggest thing for me, Jerry, is like, I just, because I am a cop, like I know what my husband's going through.
Right.
I don't walk in his shoes. You know what I mean? I don't walk in your shoes, but I can relate to you guys a lot better than, let's say, you know, somebody who has never done the job, never been around what you guys do.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's really, really important. I think that, the second thing that I would say is this whole like worrying your fucking face off about your significant other, you need to put that in its place because they're going to go do this job. And the last thing they need is you up their ass. I'm in some of these, you know, I'm in some of these Facebook groups of these women and they're like, I made my husband text me, you know, every minute, like every time he clears a call and I make it and all this stuff. And I'm like, does he really need that on his brain? Like, no,
it's stressful.
Yeah, that's added like stress. 10 times more stressful than the job. And that's what I tell them. I'm like, stop with the bullshit. Like, just stop. Like, you know, just, you got to put it in God's hands. Like, you just have to. And if you, and there's, I'm going to be honest, there's some women who cannot deal with that. And know yourself. If you can't deal with it, then have real conversations with your husband, your spouse, you know?
Yeah. 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 So I do see that in a lot of people, that thrill, right? Trying to keep that thrill, even, you know, off the job, on the job, they're doing things to keep that thrill, to keep that high. And it's hard to find that spot where you're like, peaceful. You're just feeling at peace and stuff like that. It drives my wife crazy. Cause I'm a doer. Like, I just like, oh, I need to vacuum, need to dust, need to do this. Like, I don't sit down and very often and take that time to just enjoy the peace and quiet and that adrenaline dump and be alone with my own thoughts.
Yeah. Well, sometimes you got to do that though, right?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
And the reason why, and I just want to throw that out there for everybody, is it's a coaching moment. But the reason why is because if we don't do that now, retirement's not going to be good for us.
Right.
Because, you know, as I've gotten older, I'm spending more time with friends and family who are actually retired. And we all think we're going to be so busy in retirement, and that's all well and good until our bodies literally won't let us be good. And then our minds go fast. And when, as soon as your mind goes, your body goes, and then you're going to go. And so I guess it's just so big for me. And I'm going to be honest and tell you, like, I sit down with my husband very often and we're like, hey, what's going on? And you have to understand, as like the spouse too, is like, I don't make him feel anything. I don't really care. Like, it's not that I don't care how he feels. Of course I care, but I don't care as far as just tell me how you're feeling. Oh, you had this situation. Because what would trigger me and what would trigger you might not trigger this person or that person. Right.
I agree. Yeah.
And we have different triggers. Like, we'll be talking about, I'll talk to any one of my clients and we'll be talking about, like, let's say they go to this really bad crash and they're like, well, the crash didn't bother me and the dead bodies everywhere didn't bother me, but it was this, you know, it was this person who came up and saw it and the way that they acted, like, fucking,
yeah, right.
Right. And that's what spouses don't understand, is the things that we think would be very triggering. As first responders, we have a checklist. I know you can relate to this. You go to a scene, yeah, you have a checklist. The checklist keeps you from getting emotional about things.
Right.
But something occurs that's not typical, right? We all know what's typical when we go to a crash. We know what we're going to see for the most part. We know what we're going to hear, what we're going to smell. But when there's something that's a little bit off, that's what will mess with us. And that's what people don't understand. And a lot of people don't want to talk about it because they're like, oh, I'm weak, or people are going to think I can't handle this. But it's like, no, that was just weird. That was off. Let's just talk about it. And the more you can just talk and process things, the easier things become to deal with. You don't have the pile growing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it makes perfect sense. So where can people find you to sign up for these classes or coaching and all the stuff that you're doing?
Thank you. Yeah. So you can find me on the social medias at Officer Autumn. So I'm on TikTok. I'm loving TikTok recently. And so come hang out with me on there at Officer Autumn, Instagram at Officer Autumn. You can find me on Autumn Clifford on Facebook. My podcast is called Changing the Culture. I'd love for you to come on. It's a little different than Jerry's podcast, but it's I have a very different, way about me, as you can tell. But if you jive with it and you need some good, a mindset reset, I offer a lot of that. Or you can come to my website, autumnclifford.com right now. Jerry, when will this air?
It's going to air in 2 days.
Awesome. So when you hear this, my Lady Sheepdog Club will be open. If you know, if you yourself are a female first responder or you know of one, you ought to come into this. This really is something different. It is something that I'm extremely passionate about. I've had the doors open and closed. Like, I've run this program since 2017. So the results have been spectacular. You know, we've got women in all sorts of different first responder agencies. You know, I've got dispatchers. I had a couple firefighters come through, which is cool. A lot of cops, right? And it is just different. It is training. It's a course, but then it's like this family that you don't have on the road. Trust me. And then it's also this, it's mindset. It's like a mindset reset. So if anybody's listening to this, and are slightly interested, just come to my website. It's autumnclifford.com and you will see the Lady Sheepdog group, or you can just message me. I'm pretty reachable. Anybody can message me on the socials. Thank you for asking, Jerry. I appreciate that.
Yeah, of course. I'm going to ask my very last question of you, and it's, what impact do you want to make in the world?
I want people to know that they are literally unstoppable. And it sounds a little bit cliche, but let me just explain. It's like this is when anytime I've ever fallen, right, I have felt like a fucking piece of shit, truly. And I get really down on myself and I would be like, what am I doing? What am I doing? And people have tried to stop me. You know, I've told you some stories today. there's obviously a lot more. People are always looking to see you fail, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But if you can align yourself with who you actually are, okay, not with who people want you to be, but with who you actually are and who you're actually meant to be in this world. Because I really believe that we are all vessels for the universe. And we all have reasons and purposes to be here. And if you can align yourself with that, and then you become good with who you are. Remember, I talked about that in the beginning. Like, I became like really good with who I am. I'm not trying to prove myself. If you can do those two things, you're going to literally be unstoppable. And it doesn't matter how many times you fail, because you will absolutely fail forward. You will get up. And I just want everybody to know that, like, no, it's okay. We're all going to fall. We're all going to stumble. Shit's going to happen.
Shit happens for sure.
Shit happens. For sure. You've experienced it. I've experienced it. You know, our listeners have. But the difference, the only difference between a successful person as an unsuccessful person is the successful person just keeps getting up.
Yeah.
That's it. Like that's it. I study the most successful people in the world. One of my favorite people to study is Michael Jordan. And that's his story. I mean, yes, the man has unbelievable talent, but he knew what his purpose was, basketball. He knew. It didn't matter. He knew. So he aligned himself with that. But every time he stumbled and fell, he picked himself back up. Everybody wanted to see that guy fail, right?
Yeah.
And he'll tell you, the only thing that made me better than anybody else is I didn't stop. I just never stopped working. I never stopped. And that can be you. You can become unstoppable if you do those two things that I just said.
I love it. I love it. I love the enthusiasm. And I know Autumn, she'll coach you right up on that and get you going into the right places. I can definitely see that. And I'm sure as they've listened today, you can definitely get that from her. I really appreciate you being on and taking the time out of your day.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. I'm so excited about this.
Yeah. Yeah, I am too. And we'll get it uploaded here in a matter of hours.
Woohoo!
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, thank you, Jerry. Yeah. I appreciate this.
You're welcome.
Thanks again for listening. Don't forget to rate and review the show wherever you access your podcast. If you know someone that would be great on the show, please get a hold of our host, Jerry Dean Lund, through the Instagram handles at Jerry Fire and Fuel or at Enduring the Badge Podcast. Also, by visiting the show's website, EnduringTheBadgePodcast.com, for additional methods of contact and up-to-date information regarding the show. Remember, the views and opinions expressed during the show solely represent those of our host and the current episode's guests.